Welcome to Coffee, Science and Guru, where we talk all things coffee, science and everything mystifying about coffee and unpacking all that delicious stuff we would like to know about our favorite beverage. My name is Josh, your host, and here I have the eloquent Dr. Adam Carr.
I'm more lovely than eloquent.
today's topic is going to be the art of the barista. What is being a barista? What do we want to know about being a barista? What do they do? What should they know? Let's unpack the mystifying beast that is the barista. So I wanted to ask Adam, what is your favorite thing about getting a barista-made coffee versus getting a pod machine at home or something like that? What really makes it for you?
Look, I mean, it's a funny one at the moment, right? Because, I mean, originally it was like machines couldn't make coffee as good as people, right?
Mm.
You think that that's probably changed in the last few years with certain technology that we've seen, but I would still prefer, and I think many people would probably agree, that I think a lot of people would still prefer to get the coffee from a person and to reserve it as a person. I think, you know, that a lot of that comes down to the craft of it. So that's kind of diverting a little bit from the question, but, you know, what am I looking for or what do I like about it?
Yeah, what do you like about it?
But it's, I guess mostly it's just, I mean, being served by a person, have a bit of chat with the person behind the bar often. It's, I mean, for me these days, that's kind of what it's about.
Hmm.
I didn't used to be. It was just about getting the drink that I liked. But yeah, it's more about the chat now.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Is there, what draws you to a cafe in a new area? So, you know, you've got five different cafes to pick from. Is it usually an act of convenience, or is it, you like, do you take your time to go?
Got to search.
Yeah,
got to search. I think we've been in the industry for too long, Josh. I mean, it's, you know, I think originally it would just be like, I could take a little walk maybe and see if there's something around that looks reasonable.
Yeah.
But now it's just, you know, I guess I'll do a search and see if there's a certain number of stars. I guess there are certain cues that you look for in a cafe now. So yeah. I guess, you know, relatively clean. You know, clean and called Scandinavian, sort of Scandi chic type look.
Yeah, that nice, clean,
you know,
crisp one.
Tattoos tend to work, you know, products on display quite nicely. You know, you're looking for certain machines. But again, that's professionals. Now industry professionals kind of look at it, I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose in the old cafe, the old thing, when you're working through a city square, I mean, if you call it that, you know, what am I looking for? Again, it's probably just that. Just cleanliness. I suppose in some ways, like you look for a restaurant almost.
Yeah.
Although sometimes I like the dirty restaurants. Let's not name the names.
Oh gosh, it's funny. When you step actually into the cafe, what do you imagine seeing as far as a workflow is set up? I mean, like I've walked in some cafes. Truth be told, I've even worked in one where I couldn't really change things until I understood it better. But I've actually had customers come up to the serving point when they're ready to collect their cup of coffee and knock shoulders because one's going to buy, one's going to pick up, and it's just basically a bad
oh, yeah.
setup. What sort of makes sense to you?
Oh man, I don't know. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Look, it's, I think in a workflow, that's probably something more that you can answer. I mean, it's, I actually don't think that's as much of a problem. I mean, you know, you like to know that your order is the one that's been picked up, and so having some kind of system in there for, you know.
Do you like your name being yelled across the bar, or do you like...
Oh, I don't care. I mean,
nice and simple.
I think people do like the fact that their name is yelled out from their coffee rather than order 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, yeah.
I think...
It's like two lattes.
What,
I mean, yeah.
what are your thoughts on that kind of thing?
I've worked in a few different setups. One was a bump bar setup. So literally you would call out the name on the loyalty card that gets swiped along with the order. And we've had some funny ones. We've had like Batman or Superman. Like people just put funny first names in. It's hilarious.
Mm.
You could do it that way. I've seen people simply just call out the coffees. I've definitely seen some baristas, a very unique, rare breed of barista, that can actually remember the coffee to the person's face.
Mm.
And so they can literally point or grab that specific person's attention and go, hey, your coffee is ready, to the exclusion of everyone else, so there's no confusion. And that's pretty bizarre and amazing to watch.
Mm.
Baristas who are just on the ball and have that spatial awareness is pretty neat. I've got to say, like the standard barista setup or station setup would be a case of where you order, then you'd have your coffee grinder, you get your coffee, you rack it up inside the machine and you pour your espresso, then you steam your milk, and then you hand off at the opposite end of the bench from where you order. That tends to keep people moving in orderly fashion. I think customers are pretty clued on to how that works. Like they can ascertain the way the system works within a few seconds upon walking into a cafe.
I don't know if that comes into people's minds as to whether or not they prefer it or not. I imagine that, you know... Well, I mean, perhaps your question, I guess. I mean, you're talking about why do some consumers... you know, you're asking me why I chose a particular cafe. I mean, do you think it's the barista that's the primary choice that people are making when they go choose a cafe?
That's a good question. I've seen some customers literally, and they've said it to me, they've said it to other baristas I've worked with, and they'll literally only ever walk into a cafe if they see their favourite barista behind the bar. If they cannot see a veteran barista who they know and trust, they'll actually rather bypass the cafe and skip their coffee or go somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there's another barista out there that just doesn't quite make the mark when it comes to serving their cup of coffee.
I agree with that. I think that happens in our cafe, like in my local cafe that I go to. I mean, this may sound horrible, and hopefully they're not listening to this, but there are a few people that I, you know, mind most of the guys in there are pretty good, but...
You need to take me to your cafe one day.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you'd be... unless I say at this point, probably isn't better. I mean, look, I go there. Look, there are the two or three guys that make an excellent coffee. Like, you know you're going to get a coffee that you're used to getting.
Yeah.
My coffee. I get the coffee the way I know that they make it for me. If someone else is working there, it doesn't seem to taste quite the same.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've experienced that surely as a barista, right?
Yeah.
Not you.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. There's definitely a technique. There's one that I love to use in training, where I'll use the exact same coffee shot, split it into two single espressos. So each cup has the exact same shot. There's no argument there. I'll do one jug of milk for two cups, steam all that milk in the one jug, and then pour it or split the milk into those two cups. And then for my trainees, I'll go taste the difference. And they'll taste a washed out part of the milk. They'll taste one that's heavily loaded in crema, and then they'll taste one that's been mixed in, and actually doesn't matter where you sip from the cup, it is just the same coffee from top to bottom. And that's always been a bit of an eye-opening experience, I think, for cafe owners and trainees that have come from going, wow, same coffee, same shot, all the flavors are crisp, yet you can still, on the first sip, have a really bad coffee right out of the gate.
So I guess you're saying that, you know, if the people working behind the bar aren't trained consistently, it's unlikely, you know, customers are probably right to actually taste something different.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a case. There's definitely some baristas as well that also have that service flair. They just have that charisma that keeps customers coming in. I've seen some customers come in and they literally, like I said before, they love the chat. They'll go there because it's like their morning bartender versus their evening bartender. Like it's the person that makes them feel awake and ready to take on the world.
Yeah, right. I'd imagine like anything, it's relationship. I mean, because I think there's another thing, I think perhaps working in hospitality, which... I mean, I wouldn't say I've worked long in hospitality in terms of, I really haven't. But, yeah, I'd imagine the relationship that you have with the person behind the bar is important. So it's not just about having a conversation every morning.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, knowing whether or not you're actually ready for a conversation in the first place.
Definitely.
Getting the sense that you know the person, it's like they're a short talker, or this, that, the other thing, or you know this person, they like it like this. They're not just like the coffee the way that it is. They know the level of service that's required of each particular customer.
Yeah.
Some people like a joke. Some people you can, you know, directly and openly insult and they love it.
I've heard one customer do that. I'm just like, dude, you're going to be in front of a court before you know it. And he goes, no, my customers just keep coming back because I love it.
Makes me wonder if there's like favourite barista jealousy amongst customers.
I wonder, for sure. It's so you can get insulted best.
But it's funny, you know, there's another side of thing I reckon to your favourite sort of barista. I think, you know, it's, you know, as I've always said to you, Josh, you know, I've always wanted to hire a psychologist here, and you know, we get some people who are fearful of psychologists that say, no, don't ever do that. And fair enough, yeah, I guess they can play with you a bit.
Yeah.
We've all had, yeah. But no, I mean, the idea of psychology of taste and like why you like one person rather than the other. Like, you know, for example, you know, we always, you know, we train. You train lots of people here. You know, and there is a consistency in how we train. But I'd say even after they've been trained, even with consistency machines like a Puck Press, an Uber Milk, or, you know, ABR thingy built inside their machines or whatever it happens to be, or a flow device that we're just starting to install there to make sure everyone's being consistent. I think people still will taste a difference anyway, because I think, you know, it's also a psychology game, taste.
Yeah.
You know, the way that you taste and the flavor you get, like, you know, the regularity with which, you know, I always get it from this person, I expect it to taste a certain way. And so if someone else is making it, you're expecting there to be a change.
Yeah.
And when you start, you're expecting a change. Like the old Pepsi Coke challenge, right?
Mm.
You know, do the blind tasting of Pepsi versus Coke. Everyone prefers Pepsi.
Yeah.
You know, because it's much more sugary. But as soon as you show them the can, they immediately prefer Coke.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've done the studies that look at neural pathways going from one side to the other just to show the kind of pathway that gets activated. Which, yeah. By the way, I'm not sure how current that is. So if there is a psychologist out there who's also maybe a barista, maybe you can let us know what you think and tell me that I'm dreadfully wrong, because this is not my area of expertise. But apparently different neural networks fired up. One was more direct when you saw the can of Coke.
Yeah.
And the other went through the entire processing pathway of presumably, like, I don't know what this is. I have to use my entire sense of taste rather than my eyesight as well. So, you know, I have to taste every other aspect to it to see, you know, what is it, toxic, is it this, is it that? You know, I'm probably putting too much in there, but the results certainly showed there was a different neural pathway that was fired up, tasting one blind versus tasting one with your eyes open.
There's definitely a psychology that the barista learns. I've seen a lot of baristas come in, and obviously the very first few months of the role, you're learning how everything works.
Yeah.
And you're picking up your customer skills and polishing those as you go. But then there comes a stage where you know your role. You're comfortable with what you're doing. You know your bar. You know where all your products are.
Yeah.
And you know who your regulars are. And then it comes to this next stage where you actually start... Well, what's a better word than manipulation? Because manipulation is evil.
Oh, it's, I just used
it. There's a way that I encourage my customers. So in the morning, I know, yeah, like you said before, if you wake up, especially in the Gold Coast when I used to train, 5 a.m., probably 80 to 90% of my customers did not want to say a word. In the first half hour, they were like,
off to the job.
Yeah, I want to say as little words as possible. It's like pretty much coffee now, serve, thank you. And then that was it.
Yeah.
And there'll be transaction. And it's probably one of the reasons why I love the morning shift so much, because it's just nice and quiet.
Yeah, there you go.
But there are some customers that come in and they are ready to take on the day. And it's like, okay, cool, we're fired up now, we're awake. Yeah, right. Yep, cool, we've had our double hit of Joe.
So who would you prefer then as a barista? I mean, do you prefer the ones that are just grab and go, or do you prefer with basic politeness, because let's be honest, grab and go people can also be rude. Prefer those kind of customers, or do you like people that have a bit of banter, or is it just depends on the person?
Depends on the person. Definitely you've got, I think part of the art of being a barista is definitely that relational point that you put forward before, in that you've got some customers that 20 years ago, cappuccinos were served third espresso, third milk, third froth, and it was fat froth with a lot of chocolate powder.
Mm.
And then you get these customers that remember that coffee, and they go, they don't make them like they used to.
Mm.
And then you have those baristas like, oh, I know what coffee you want. And so you make that coffee for them and you light up their day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're their favorite person in all the world from that point onwards.
Mm.
You've got some customers though where I've literally, they come in and they shot an espresso and I'm like, Josh, that espresso was unreal. But an espresso is just an espresso. So they're in and out. Mm. Like, they do not stick around. They don't need to stick around. And those customers are really good too, because they're here for their caffeine hit and they move on.
Mm.
There's definitely a lot of customers that come in where they can give you a bit of a rough time, or their mind's elsewhere, and so they can come off a bit rude or something like that. But in general, I think the reason why people come to a cafe in the first place is they want a coffee that's made with love and intention and purpose behind it. Otherwise they could just go to a super automatic machine and go, yep, cool, I've made my coffee at home.
It's interesting. I should after this go for a little run up to the local Coles. I think they've put one of those automatic machines that we've been touting for a while. I actually haven't tried one from them at Coles at the moment.
Mm.
I'm trying. But look, I guess I have a question. What would you say is more important? Maybe this is a question for the end of the podcast, but I'll ask it now, it's in my head. With all that being said, it seems like, you know, what's more important, do you think, a barista's skill or a barista's, personality?
I have...
Are they necessarily separated?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I have mostly said to my customers, definitely when I was behind the bar day in, day out, I said, 80% of the transaction, it's honestly the relationship.
Yep.
It's I can sell a bad cup of coffee easily. Because if you make a person feel like $1 million, they, okay, cool, the coffee's...
$1 million.
Well, yeah, the coffee could taste average. You're like, okay, my coffee's a bit average, but geez, I feel good after walking out.
Mm.
And then it's like, man, that guy remembered my name. He remembered my order the moment I walked in.
Yeah.
He was all over it. And then, you know, he made me feel good. Like, he got it out. He didn't hold me up or anything. And maybe the coffee's a bit average, but I might try again tomorrow because tomorrow the coffee might be better. So even for new baristas starting in the game, the ace in the hole is just be customer service orientated. Yeah. It's that will always, day in, day out, if you make people feel like $1 million, they keep coming back.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Makes me wonder if we should actually start a course up in terms of like barista skills, do the actual basic training, then we move into how to modify your personality. Not to modify personality, how to get the most out of your customers.
It's interesting.
I don't mean money, I mean in terms of like interaction. That's,
you know. As far as, you know, get the most out of your customers and encouraging your customers, there's something that I've actually started incorporating into my training as of late. It's a favourite thing of mine to do, which is, because I've had a lot of people hit me up for barista hacks and stuff, and I'm hoping to do a YouTube video soon with Ben about it, about barista hacks. But there's one that I love to do with my customers, and it worked fluently. Customers come in, you want to close up at 2 o'clock. They come in at 1:45. Are you still open? Can we get a coffee? I'm like, yep, no worries. You make them a delicious cup of coffee. They sit down and want to talk for half an hour, 45 minutes, and you're like, dude, I close at 2. Mm. You gently tell them, and they're like, oh, sorry. Some will go, or some will just like prepare. You know, they're so content with you cleaning up around them. It makes the whole situation quite awkward. So what I used to do is that in the beginning of the morning, when dining customers come in, I would preheat their cups, so all the heat goes into the cup first, then put the coffee in, put the milk in, and their cup would stay hotter for longer.
Mm.
Now, most baristas, 90% of baristas know this. Preheat your cups, serve your drinks, customers will hang around, hopefully order a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
The next step is that you've got always got one customer come in, and they will actually go, Josh, I want it hotter. I'm like, okay, cool. So you do a couple extra degrees on the milk, you serve it and go, Josh, it's not quite good. Can you do it hotter? You're like, okay, cool. So you preheat the cup for longer, you do the milk extra hot, and they still come back and they go, Josh, it's still not hot enough. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I'm like, yep, no worries. I gotcha. You literally put the handle under hot water. You blast the handle alone. You do the coffee, you do the milk, you put it all together. By the time the cup gets to the customer, they pick it up and they go, wow, this is perfect temperature. I'm like, yep, no worries, see you tomorrow. And they keep coming back just based on that. And then you got customers that come in that 1:45 slot when you're closing at 2. And at that point, you don't preheat the cups. Yeah, and so the drink is hot, and they're like, oh, fire, I've got to finish this quickly. And they're like, oh, coffee's gone. Thanks for a great day. See you tomorrow. And they move. And then you can actually shut up on time.
Yeah, right.
It's these little barista hacks definitely work. It's pretty cool learning how people drink their cups of coffee. It's a good thing.
So I guess another question, I suppose, when it comes to like barista training as well, we're talking about the art of being barista, which is this thing. So, I mean, you know, how much training is really needed to get an acceptable kind of coffee being produced in a cup, do you think?
Well, I look at my students and how fast they pick up the concepts and I'm delivering them, and this is not meant to be a backhand compliment to myself, but I am sort of jealous for the level of understanding that it has come for the coffee industry now. If I had the same understanding when I was learning, I started out in a franchise chain. It would take about 3 months to make a barista. I held the store record for taking 6 months because my milk was terrible. I was so bad at it, such an overthinker. And if I had understood what I teach my students now, I think I would have been in a much better place. So I think to make a quality barista, even for cafe owners, when they get behind the bar and they're hiring someone and they're going, yep, this is the person I want, this is the attitude I want, because you can teach skills, you can't teach attitude. But if you find that gem of a person, I think you can have them making killer coffee inside of a week.
Yeah, I guess now also with technology it becomes easier. But again, I guess it depends on the cafe, just knowing the kinds of cafes that serve mild supplies, just knowing, you know, the higher level machines. It's ironic in some ways, isn't it? But the higher kind of quality account, if you want to call it that way, so a person, say, or in a cafe doing like 100 kilos a week, say, you'll give them all the tech tools and gadgets that take the art out of making the coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, not always necessarily, right?
For sure.
They want, but it's kind of a, and then the lower level, I shouldn't say, lower level is probably one way of saying it, but people who are barely doing a lot of volume, we probably could do with having a degree of automation, agree with that. But because it's not bringing in enough money, it becomes a, you know what I mean?
It's kind of a catch 22.
It is a little bit. There's no, yes, okay, there's some sweet spot maybe somewhere in the middle. So, but it's, mind you, you've got to start off somewhere. If the coffee is good and it gets better, then maybe you can justify more automated machinery. Because, and that's the thing, some of the machinery is there to help things go through faster, but some of it's for consistency, which you'd hope that they'd be able to get.
Yeah, and if they've got it all dialed in, then the only thing that really brings more customers through the door is reputation, be it word of mouth, organic growth of actual marketing.
Right.
It's that's definitely brings in a lot more people. I've seen some cafes, and they've been busy from the moment they've opened their doors, and they've either traded on reputation of past businesses. So, for instance, there's a good one, Paddock Bakery up in the Gold Coast. They are very well known for making beautiful food and great coffee and all that sort of deal. And then the owner sold up to my previous boss. This is how I sort of know the story. And then they opened up a brand new cafe in Burleigh. So it's a lot more busy. It's at the beach, all that sort of deal. They opened up a bakery called Tata Bakery and it went nuts. And on day one. But there was no reason for it to go nuts except for people were knowing that their previous business was amazing. So you could trade on that reputation. I definitely see that. With a lot of people that have been in the biz for a while, they just know how to approach things and they know how to start off on the best foot. I think experience definitely teaches there. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's so what's, do you think, I love to ask this. This is, automation's definitely your game.
Yeah.
With baristas, I still have baristas come through and they go, wow, 7 Miles is doing some amazing stuff. Like, you got the, we've got this beautiful perfect pour program. We've got this all this automation coming to the industry. Are baristas going to lose their jobs?
No. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think people still want to be served by a person. I think I think as we've kind of always said, automation is there to sort of unlock a greater hospitality focus. So rather than playing with the machine all day, you're actually looking up and talking to someone. And it sounds like it's probably what everyone wants. You know, they want to engage, they want to be served by someone, they want to have something crafted, which you still can get with automated piece of machine. But look, I mean, in some ways, I mean, you know, and that's, I shouldn't say, it's not just the line, it's also what we believe. But at the same time, you know, there's, you know, if you look at what's happened after COVID now, because I mean, let's talk about it. We're in COVID at the moment, and we're talking the podcast as we're sort of, let's hope, riding in the last kind of quarter or last kind of third of the pandemic. You know, it's a lot of the problem. You know, travel's been restricted, and a lot of staff that work in hospitality, I'm not sure if this is true overseas as it is in Australia, but a lot of them are, you know, they're international students, or they're backpackers, or they're holidayers, and they go into a cafe because the hours make a lot of sense. They can still have a lot of free time. And, you know, it's certainly can learn to make a good old Australian coffee. I mean, it's, you know, but we've lacked that. And so the industry is kind of crying out loud for, you know, assistance in making coffee. And it seems absurd to me, and I suspect it probably is happening, it seems absurd that automation isn't being embraced more widespread for those kinds of accounts. And we already identified, and people have already said retaining good staff is one of the biggest issues and risks.
Yeah, it really is.
From the 2025 report. So there was already a problem before COVID.
Yeah.
And now it's been amplified. So, you know, and let's be honest though, Josh, I mean,
do you think the barrier of entry is still too high when you're trying to outlay the capital for?
I think it's getting lower and lower. I mean, look at what's happening with the gravimetric grinders, that is, the grinders that weigh by mass. I mean, the price point and the quality and the speed at which they operate, is it's getting better and better. I mean, every year things get better like that. I don't think gravimetrics, to be honest, I'm not sure how, you know, my opinion on gravimetrics is I don't see their, you know, actually, no, I won't make a comment on this one. I honestly think, you know, getting more consistent timers and grinders is a more important factor at this stage, particularly for the lower price point. I think to get that level of consistency, you can just put the handle down, just leave it, and it spits out a more or less plus or minus half a gram accuracy coffee.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah.
I think that's a more important innovation, if you were to speak.
Yeah, because I certainly see a lot of volumetrics still spitting out between 1 to 1.5 grams.
Yeah, right.
Of excess or under.
Volumetrics, you said?
Not gravimetrics, but volumetrics, the timer style.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, if you can get it up, you know, I think that's what the Anthem sort of made us know, its medical grade timer. It was able to get a tighter shot. I can't remember what we got on the variability in that grinder, but either way, like, getting something that can spit that out so that people don't have to be constantly weighing in, weighing out, and then, you know, re-tearing, not tearing properly, can't get the speed of service out there.
Yeah, that definitely chews up time behind the bar, for sure.
Realize, most machines extract themselves these days. Machines, you just push a button and offloads a shock within a certain amount of time. Don't have to watch it the entire time. I mean, Automation's already kind of there. It makes people's lives easier, and
yeah.
you can get coffees out faster.
Hmm.
So it's, to be honest, it's always been here. It hasn't cost anyone jobs that I'm aware of yet. I'd imagine at a point, having fully automatic machines in cafes, that would change it. Yeah, you'd probably look at reducing headcount at that point.
Yeah.
But that's probably the reason you've implemented it.
Hmm.
But I don't think people will go there for much more than a caffeine hit. Yeah. I mean, it's the same reason that people go to Coles.
Yeah, yeah.
Supermarkets or service stations for fast coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, you basically just want to get it done, get the caffeine hit alone. Yeah.
That's right, and it's normally it's acceptable.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think I've actually gotten one from 7-Eleven or from Coles or whatever. I haven't gotten a coffee from there yet.
Yeah,
it's actually just not in me to necessarily go there. I always go to a cafe myself. But,
Do you ever try all the special blends, the single origins, all that sort of deal? Is for you as a consumer, how high does it rate in your mind? I mean, I have a lot of cafe customers that we've worked with in this cafe, this company, and they're like, hey, we want to do everything. We want to do pour over, we want to do cold drip, cold brew, single origins, and we want to have four different grinders.
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, how long have you been in coffee? And they're like, oh, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
To me, single origins is a marketing game. It always has been. I mean, I suppose you could say that as a professional. As a consumer, I think I've probably ordered a single origin, if it wasn't for actual market research, maybe twice.
Yeah.
When I go out for a coffee, what I enjoy is a milk-based coffee. That's what I've always enjoyed.
Yeah.
I've done buying of singles and... done a lot of development with our roasters here on singles, and we've got some cracking coffees. And
yeah,
if I could drink them by choice, that would be a buy filter.
Yeah.
For a light, which by the way, is not available as readily. It's more available now, but it hasn't been as readily available. So, and pour overs, I'm kind of here and there about. The person makes a huge difference on the pour over.
Yeah, definitely.
So I choose to avoid that unless I know the person.
Yeah. yeah.
But. I guess to answer your question, singles, no, I would normally never order it. I mean, if someone has some singles there, to an extent, you'd say, okay, maybe they know what they're doing.
Mm.
But it's not something, an espresso single, never.
Yeah.
Like, never. It'd have to be like I drink it here at 7 Miles, it'd have to be a filter.
Yeah.
Filter single.
I think I always go by tasty notes. I'm always looking for something that says cherry. If it says cherry, I'm a sucker for it.
Well, that's a good business. I think that's as good an indication as any, whether it's from Tanzania or Colombia.
Mm.
There's so many different processing methods now. I mean,
you can
taste it almost like anything.
Yeah.
It'll taste like coffee, but it's going to taste,
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So it's...
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an indication, but it's funny how I say all that, and I've got to say I've enjoyed a whole lot of singles we put through our thing across the last few years, but, I've rarely actually gone out to order one in a cafe, and maybe that's just a trust issue. I'll make a single pour over or a single filter at home, but it's rare that I'd get one from a cafe.
Yeah, and that trust issue simply winds back to relationships,
right.
As we said before. Like if you get served by a smiling, barista half a dozen times and you have a good banter, you're very liable to go, hey, let's try one of your singles or one of your...
Yeah, my local guy, I'll go back to my local one that I go to, and they do pour overs. Yeah. And, his pour overs normally pretty good, but it's funny. Single origins I've also found, and maybe Italians will like this. I told you this story. We're sitting at a table in Italy having a meal, and then said, you roast coffee. He said, well, I don't roast the coffee, but coffee roasting. So, you don't do any of that. Single origin, expletive. And I was like, well, yes, we do. But it's funny, I actually find a lot of single origins. So they're very interesting and they're delicious in many ways, but I found, and maybe I'll be shunned out of the industry now for saying it, but I actually find that typically the balance, and you can get a balanced coffee, but I don't think it's as well balanced as you get out of a blend.
Yeah.
And blends have been made to be that way, right?
Yeah.
Mass market acceptability and consistency and stability and... balance of acidity with this, that, and the other. I mean, different people are doing this.
Yeah, they're certainly built to bring everything to the table, a balanced cup.
Yeah, that's right. And I like balance. I won't say it's a mantra of mine. But, I know I'm going to get that with a blend. And again, I actually wouldn't ever have a blend generally as a filter coffee.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, there you go. It's not a question I've ever thought of before, by the way, that one.
Yeah.
But what about you?
I've Definitely, like, I can't help myself. If I go down to Melbourne or something like that, for Australians, that is still the mecca of coffee.
Yeah.
It's where we hold a lot of events.
On some 7 miles home base is the mecca.
Please keep me employed. But when I go down there, I definitely like to see what other people in the industry are doing. I've certainly got favourite horns, and it's got to be a combination of factors for me. Like, I'm in Melbourne for whatever reason, but if I'm going for coffee, I'm also going for the whole experience, be it barista, be it location, be it aesthetics, be it the coffee itself. And I'll try everything. I'll drink the espressos, the filters, the V60s, you name it, I'll have it all. And I spend all my play money for holidays goes straight on coffee. And then I probably don't do as much up here. I've enjoyed a lot more filters since having moved to Sydney.
Yeah.
Sydney's big on filter. It's good to see it come into the coast and up into Queensland. It's still not... Still, I don't think, just from the feel of it, doesn't have the same market penetration. But it's definitely... Having gone to Melbourne and learned just recently with the SCA, learned more on brewing, my mind and my skills have qualitatively taken a leap, I feel.
Yeah.
It just opened up a whole other door for me. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, with filter, it's...
But it's more understandable side by side by side.
Yeah, that's right.
People don't order coffee like that. It's very rare that people will get a flight or, you know, espresso and a latte. It doesn't always happen that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then coffee's here and it's gone. So you have this beautiful espresso, but you can't recreate it 4 months down the track. It's pretty hard unless it's a blend.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, consistency, you can buy a crop, but it sort of ages over time. It's pretty stable after the first few weeks. Google car. I guess you give an indication. We did Cafe 2025. The statistics we got from a whole bunch of different sources, you know, point of sale, Durham, whatever, showed that, you know, in Australia at least, I mean, you know, filter coffee and black coffee consumption was about the most tenth of all coffee consumed. I think we expect it to grow at about 20%, but still, by and large, milk is the thing that people are drinking the most in their coffee. I mean, in Australia, obviously in the States it's different. It's mostly, you know, coffee, filter coffee that's got a bit of cream in it. I think you need to see what the coffee solids ratio is to milk solids. Anyway, that's another thing for another time.
Definitely.
But, you know, it's really Australia is the milk-based market, and we still expect it to be in the next 5-10 years. I mean, we expect it to drop a little bit, but with the increase in cold brew and a few other things like that. And cold brew is another interesting kettle of fish. It's funny, I saw some data on it on the other day, and I, after looking at it, and maybe I was still processing in my head, I'm kind of a bit skeptical to see where it's going to go eventually. Don't get me wrong, I'm working on stuff on cold brew.
For sure.
Lots of people like cold brew, and it's certainly, everyone's touting it as the thing in the market that's going to boom. It certainly has boomed in the States.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I suspect, quick for the market to volatile.
Yeah, it could be a bit more speculative.
I initially thought that, yeah, it's definitely going to boom. Yeah, I saw things saying it's going to go up by like 500% in the next 2 years. Our own summer blend has doubled in terms of its sales recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, that's still a roasted coffee that we sell that people can make a cold brew out of. So it's increasing, but I don't know how much that's because of market. I'm going into too many details about barista type thing, but it'd be interesting to sort of see where that eventually goes, you know, and the increasing consumption of black coffee in Australia. It could go up more than we predict. But it also.
I do have one question. This has actually been really... I've really enjoyed this cover. Maybe it's because I know a bit more about this one.
Okay.
The science shoots over my head. what I wanted to know is, from a consumer point of view, or even from your role working as the head of coffee science education and working with our other departments and your position in the industry... When it comes to a cafe, what priority do you think they should place on barista skills, customer experience, quality of product, marketing, or speed of service? Do you have any? Is there maybe one? Like, would you put that in a certain order, or is there maybe one that you really think cafes should try and just clamp down on?
Man, this is almost like a business question in terms of what's the most important thing, sales, marketing, or operations. You know, I mean, you know, many people would say that sales is the thing that's king, so as long as you can generate sales, you can sustain yourself in sort of the business, and I agree with that. You need to have product to sell. and it needs to be something people are willing to buy. I think quality is important, but it's probably not number one.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that most of the quality is from the milk factory in Australia.
Yeah.
So as long as you can steam the milk without burning it, and obviously hot enough that people think that it's warm.
Yeah.
That seems to be, I think that's probably one of the bigger factors. I would say, you know, in terms of generating sale, we've already talked a little bit about it. What do you look for when you're choosing a cafe? You know, vibe and atmosphere and, you know, and the way that people treat their customers and knowing speed of service. It is almost entirely down to customer experience. So, now, is that sales or is it marketing? Is it both? You know, it is both. You know, there's invitation. So architecture of your space matters hugely. The people that are serving matter hugely.
Yeah.
And, you know, the quality of what you serve and the speed in which it is served. So you can call that an operational consideration, which is all in the end, customer experience in the end anyway. That's a very close third. That I would say is important to get right. You know, people don't come there and just taste nothing.
Yeah.
But that's what is. That some people do order that, my dad being one. I usually comes and orders like milk, half strength latte. Shouldn't say that against my dad. That's what he likes. It's the way he likes it. It's fine.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly
but, like, you know,
right.
There are plenty of people that still order that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I'd say that's the order. I mean, customer experience and quality of the product, they're all part of the customer experience, let's be honest. And marketing, you know, placing you on the map. I kind of feel like people do the marketing for you. You mentioned word of mouth. I mean, yeah. Ben would very highly disagree with me. I'm sure placing yourself on a map physically. I already mentioned that if I'm going to a new destination, I'm going to look at Google Maps to see where the highest star ratings are on.
Yeah, definitely.
So there is a level of everything that needs to be done. Let's be honest, everything needs to be done to be successful.
Yeah, I'll definitely hit up Bruce's I know that are in the area and go, hey, where do you recommend?
Yeah.
So
being physically... Be able to actually place yourself on a map so people can review is good, but at the end of the day, it's what people have experienced coming into your
establishment,
and that's the quality of service that they get and the vibe that they get from the place.
I think
hire a good architect.
It reminds me, this question actually just sort of reading over it, the thought came to mind. It reminded me of an old New York joke. Basically, you got three hot dog stand operators and they find a genie in a dustbin. So they rub the dustbin and this genie comes out. He goes, I'll grant you three wishes, but because there's three of you, you only get one each because, you know, we're cheap here in New York. Jokes.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
Basically, he comes out with this joke and he goes, hey, what would you like? And he goes, I want the best buns in all of New York. I like this bread needs to be warm, toasty, smell good. I'll have a line out the door. And he goes, no worries, bang. Guy disappears, has the best bread in all of New York making hot dogs. Another guy, he goes, mate, it's about the sausage. If you get the right meat, the right combination of sauce, you get all that together, there's nothing like a good hot dog with the right amount of meat. And he goes, yeah, okay, cool, bang, disappears. And he has the best sausages in all of New York. The third guy goes, I just want a hungry line that never ends. Bang, disappears. The guy never goes out of business.
There you go.
So it's an interesting thought. When I heard that joke, I was like, I mean, yes, it's a joke, but that's definitely something to think on. That's what every operator does want. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that sometimes in the industry, I think we lose sight of customer. We, you know, you hide behind a machine and you make something as good as possible and you lose sight of the fact that actually it's the person that's across from you. That's giving you your business, and you know they matter more than what you put in the cup to give them matters a lot. Obviously, you know it's the hospitality industry; it
sure
all contributes to it. But you know, it's I agree. You know, customer first. You know, you'll never be wrong.
Definitely,
thinking of someone else.
definitely. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, I reckon that has been a stunning conversation. Thank you very much for your time, Adam.
Josh, man. Sam Julian's going to join us today.
Yeah.
It's a few interesting points.
Definitely. We hope to have him back definitely next time. So, again, this has been Ask from Coffee Science and Guru. My name is Josh. And thank you very much for dialing in and having listened to our banter and talk. I hope to see you guys next time. Awesome. Take it easy.
Thank you, Josh.
Bye. Yeah.